Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me is Eric Johnson, colleague at MRM. For the past week, Eric, we have been talking about the gold plates and how important this is in the Mormon narrative.
Well, Bill, for those listeners who are just tuning in today, we do have these on our website, mrm.org. We have all the radio shows that are there on the main site. You can listen to the last four. We encourage you to do that. But just in 30 seconds, Bill, can you give us a summary of what you've been telling us this week?
Whoa, 30 seconds. Basically, we're talking about the importance of the gold plate story, because if there were no gold plates, then of course there was certainly no real Book of Mormon that came from an ancient manuscript or ancient plates which contained a record of the people who lived on this American continent, as Mormons have led to believe. I've also noticed that many Mormons, in describing this story, have to kind of change the story in order to make it more plausible. Because if Joseph Smith really had gold plates, as we've been mentioning, gold plates, the size that Joseph Smith gives us, 6 inches by 8 inches by 6 inches deep, would have weighed about 200 pounds. And nobody seems to dispute that. As we discussed yesterday, John Witzow and Franklin Harris both admitted that if a cube of solid gold of that size, if the gold were pure, would weigh 200 pounds, which would be a heavy weight for a man to carry, even though he were of the athletic type of Joseph Smith. So these men are admitting that 200 pounds is pretty incredible. You can't lift it. You can't. You just can't do it. It's physically impossible. Even though I had a Mormon man, I was talking to a group of young men, and I had this Mormon adult. Sadly, these are adults making these kind of excuses. He came up and told these high schoolers that I was talking to, don't listen to this guy. Joseph Smith could have lifted those plates with his pinky finger because he was a prophet of God. And after he left, I turned to these young kids. I says, you see, this is why I can't be a Mormon. If I've got to believe that kind of stuff, I'm going to have a very difficult time being a Latter-day Saint, because this is not rational thinking. It's not rational thinking.
Why did he need his pinky?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Why couldn't he have just levitated it with his thoughts?
Okay, so Bill, we got to get this weight down. If I'm a Mormon apologist, I got to get this weight under 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. What are the common theories out there that are being used to make the weight less?
Well, Witzow and Franklin, they proffered the idea that the plates were probably made of an alloy. And they say that this alloy, with a 10% air gap, probably would have weighed close to above 117 pounds, a weight easily carried by a man as strong as was Joseph Smith. And again, no, it doesn't work that way. It sounds plausible on paper, but it doesn't work in real life. As we've mentioned here, Sandra Tanner's plates on display at the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, her plates weigh 118 pounds, only 1 pound heavier than what John Witzow is talking about. And most people who go to lift those plates for the first time think they're actually bolted down because they don't move.
Okay, so that's too heavy. What are we going to do to make it even less now?
Well, here's what Mormon apologists have come up with. They've come up with what is known as the Tumbaga theory. Tumbaga is a Central American alloy. It can be made up of various amounts of gold and copper, but it has to have some kind of gold in there to give it some longevity. And this story goes back to a metallurgist by the name of Reed Putnam. This story was first published in the Improvement Era back in September 1966, volume 69, number 9, page 830, if anybody wants to check out that reference. He says this. He says, Tumbaga. He says, thus a block of Tumbaga of the dimensions indicated for the plates of the Book of Mormon, and with an 8-carat alloy and 3% native impurity, would weigh 106.88 pounds. Using such a block as the beginning point, notice this next line, Eric, 50% of the weight should be subtracted for airspace.
So air gaps of 50%.
Yeah, 50%. Now, John Witzow only gave it 10%, and that was an arbitrary number. Now, what does Reed Putnam gives us? Not 10, not 20, not 30.
These things are warped.
50% air gap. in between each plate. And that doesn't even work well because, again, even though tumbaga being made up of partial copper would certainly be stronger than gold being mixed with the gold, but even that, if you were to start putting that weight on top of each other, each one of these plates on top of each other, at least the bottom part would start
level.
To flatten out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at the very top you would still have this 50% air gap, but he's assuming there's a 50% air gap throughout the entire 6 inches. This is too incredibly hard to believe, but you can understand a Mormon who needs to believe this story is going to look to this as being the escape hatch. He goes on to say, he says, okay, 50% of the weight should be subtracted for airspace. Thus, the weight of the stack of plates would be about 53 pounds. If each plate were 0.02 of an inch thick, it would occupy up to 0.05 of an inch in the stack, and there would be 20 plates to the inch. The unsealed portion would then consist of 40 plates or 80 sides. If the plates had been made of a 12-karat gold alloy, they would have weighed 86.83 pounds. Now, my sheet metal plates weigh just under 80 pounds, and when I was having Mormons try to lift those, they all seemed to think this is going to be a heavy weight to carry under your arm. But yet I did have one Mormon gentleman, Rod Meldrum, who happened to be there one day, and he believes in the Heartland theory of Book of Mormon locations. And he said the plates probably weighed about 50 pounds, and I challenged him on that. I says, well, wait a minute. I mean, you don't believe in the Tumbaga theory because you believe in the Heartland theory, which is a North American setting for the Book of Mormon, not a Central American.
Because Mormons don't agree. I mean, even
Mormons don't agree on this.
Even church leaders, they won't even talk about that because it's something that's controversial within the church.
And as far as I know, Tumbaga is only found in the Central American area, probably further south as well, I assume. But I don't know of any examples of Tumbaga ornaments or artifacts in the North American area. And that would be a difficulty for a person who holds to the Heartland theory and thinking that the Book of Mormon lands were actually up in Missouri and Illinois and places like that. Now, he didn't explain to me how he got it down to 50 pounds. We didn't talk about that. We didn't talk for very long at all. But he did use that argument. He used the same argument that they're telling you when you go to the church and check out their display. Those plates that they put on display, the ones that had about 47 sheets of metal and the rest was made of some kind of plaster product, 50 pounds. In other words, they had to make the product fit their theory. They didn't take the theory and try to make a product, which is what I did. And I just used sheet metal, which is 60% lighter than gold.
Well, Bill, even with this, you're talking only about 80 sides on 40 plates. I don't know. We've talked about this before. I don't know if that's enough room to be able to write the entire 500-plus page book called the Book of Mormon.
That's a question that comes up, and many Mormons will say, well, yeah, but we don't know. One character could have been like 10 words, you know? And, okay, I don't know how they could prove that, and from what I've understood of how languages are actually formed and such, I don't think that's the way most language is. I mean, in other words, we have characters that make certain sounds, and you don't have like one character that equals 10 words. We just don't have that. Even Egyptian hieroglyphics, the character itself stood for something. If it was a wavy line, it stood for what? A river or maybe an ocean or something like that. Even then, you wouldn't have a real specific explanation unless you had other characters to try and explain that and such. So I don't know if that really flies. Maybe a linguist could solve that dilemma for the Latter-day Saints.
So, Bill, what are you going to do when somebody says supernatural strength, that Joseph Smith was given power? You want to call it a miracle? You don't want to call it a miracle. It seems like you almost have to have something there. So let's say he had a supernatural strength. What are you going to do with that?
That's a common argument that comes up when I talk to Latter-day Saints about this. Well, think about it though. If it was really supernatural strength and God had to intervene on behalf of Joseph Smith for him to be able to lift these plates and run with them as he says he did, why in the world are these Mormon apologists trying at all to get the weight of the plates down to a manageable level? Why don't they just leave it at gold, leave it at 200 pounds, and be done with it?
And why not give God the glory in this? Because in every miracle you see in the Bible, somehow God receives the glory. Here, you would have a perfect opportunity to uplift Heavenly Father for what he has done.
You would think so.
It's not done.
Let me go back to Reed Putnam very quickly, because he says in this same article, he says, the plates were not so heavy that a man could not carry them. Joseph Smith was a man of youth and vigor, yet Mormon was 74 years of age when he turned them over to his son. And he says, see Mormon 6:6. He goes on to say, we are not led to believe that the weight of the plates was a great hindrance. The witnesses testified that they had hefted them, indicating the weight seemed tolerable. So, obviously, we don't read of any supernatural intervention here, and Putnam didn't seem to believe that. According to Richard L. Bushman, a Mormon historian, he said that when the plates were wrapped in a linen cloth, they lay on Joseph and Emma's table, and according to Bushman, Emma occasionally moved them around on the table as her work required of it.
So she had supernatural strength, too.
She never mentions she needed that to move them. And one other interesting thing is Emma does say how she one time took her fingers across the edge of the metal plates that were underneath a covering. She never peeked. And she said they made a metallic sound. Well, if they made a metallic sound, they weren't plates of gold, because gold does not make a metallic sound like that. It's too soft. It actually makes a thumping type sound. So, again, you're right. Why would they have to go through such gymnastics to make this story work? Let's get the plates, make them out of Tumbaga, give them a 50% air gap. I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but that's just, it's comical because it's so capricious. You just come up with a 50% number. You have no evidence to support that whatsoever.
Bill, I don't know. I mean, you can visit our website and listen to these shows again. There's other information I think we have on our website. You were featured in the CRI Journal in 2010, or no, 2011. What? How could they possibly find out more if they want to get something like that to learn more about this issue here?
Well, if they want to read that article, they'd have to go on the CRI website, which is, I think,
equip.org. Yeah.
And the article title was Problems with the Gold Plates of the Book of Mormon, where I kind of go through a lot of the stuff that we've been discussing for the past few days. But you're right. If a person wants to hear the past broadcasts, they should just go to mrm.org and look at our archive shows if they want to get a full picture of what we've been talking about. I hope this hasn't been too terribly confusing for some of those that have kind of jumped into the conversation a little late, but it is something that I think as Christians we should understand, and I do think it's a valid topic to bring up.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wanted to go to the Holy Land? It's the place where Jesus walked, a place of great significance in our Bibles. In late February of 2013, Mormonism Research Ministry and Utah Lighthouse Ministry are hosting an 11-day trip to Israel. Among other places, we will experience baptism in the Jordan River, walk through Hezekiah's Tunnel, explore Masada, and float in the Dead Sea. During our trip, we plan to spend a day with Israeli resident Joel Kramer, a former Utah pastor and current film producer, who will take us to Cave 1 and Qumran and Jericho as well. In addition, a 7-day pre-extension tour to Turkey is available. Your price includes all transportation, admission fees, meals and taxes, and tips. If you've never been to the Holy Land, or even if you have, join Bill McKeever, Sandra Tanner, and several local Utah pastors for the trip of a lifetime. It all begins February 19th, 2013. Visit theapologeticstudybibletour.com for more information, or call 602-788-8864.